Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me say congratulations on your long time in radio, you and your team, and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. This is the 37th year of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the anniversary show. My name is Pedro Fernandez, often imitated but never duplicated. 37 years of knocking out all bums. This is hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I'm going to bring in some special guests this hour. We'll talk boxing for the most part. I'll bring in Kenny Rafer from the UK. Of course, he's a boxer of note over there. He's a trainer. He also knows what he's talking about when it comes to the world of prize fighting. And of course, initially in our next segment, we'll bring in the man that brought us I used to call him the bean counter. What I mean by that? The guy that ran CompuBox, Logan Hobson. I mean, they came together with this idea where they would count the punches on TV, the right hands, the left hands, all that kind of good stuff. And of course, that became revolutionary as far as boxing was concerned because everybody had it. And every major telecast, ESPN, HBO, people were like, let's go to CompuBox numbers, go to the CompuBox numbers. Of course, sometimes they were great, sometimes they didn't make a whole lot of sense. The bottom line is Logan makes a lot of sense, and he'll be here in a few minutes to talk boxing and, of course, MMA right here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines all around the planet as we come to you close live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. The toll-free studio line, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, the studio text line, no commitments. And guess what? You can say what you want. I mean, it can't be censored. 415-275-1613. The studio text line, once again, no stress. 415-275-1613. You tune to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, of course, live coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. This is Ring Talk.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Some new Tower of Power. Check it out, towerofpower.com. They've got two albums. I don't know if they call them albums anymore, but they've got two, like, digital releases in the past year and a half. Check them out at towerofpower.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking for the world of boxing, MMA. Now, my next guest has had more ringside seats than anybody I know. He sat on the first row of every boxing match I think I watched for like 25 years. I kid you not. Of course, he was the man that brought us CompuBox, Mr. Logan Hobson. How are you, Logan?
Hey, Pedro, long time. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. How did the CompuBox thing start? I used to call you guys bean counters in my column. Remember that? I used to call you guys bean counters.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, I mean,
and I remember Larry Merchant when we first came out with it. We would just bristle when he would call it a computer toy on the broadcast. We would just sit there. We'd be like, "Oh, what are you gonna see that for?"
Yeah, well, that's Larry's. But anyway, CompuBox is still going. You sold it. What's going on with that?
I sold my end of it in 2003. Uh-huh. Bob Canobio, who I co-founded the company with, uh-huh, is still going strong, doing very well with CompuBox. They've expanded into MMA and, you know, all fighting sports, and they're doing very well.
Logan, you had great seats, man. How long did you do that?
I did it for almost 20 years. We were at ringside, and it was wonderful. We came up, we had seen a tennis program that was tracking every shot in a tennis match, mm-hmm, and we said, you know what, why don't we just try that in boxing? And we got a software guy to come in, and we programmed the keys on a computer, and we went down to Atlantic City and tried it out. It was a Trevor Burbick fight in Atlantic City that we did our first live. And we saw it worked, and we took it to John Condon at Madison Square Garden at the time, and he liked it. He put it on, and then we went to Ross Greenberg at HBO Sports, and Ross loved it. And Ross Greenberg was a real pioneer. You know, he went for it.
I'm laughing because I remember when I worked for FNN Sports, Financial News Network, we were in Texas and this and that, and I said, you know, we really need one of those CompuBox guys. And the guy looked over me and goes, I'll count the punches for you. And I said, not quite. I mean, he thought he was going to do me a favor. You know what I'm saying? Because he'd never done it. He was a TV producer, never done a boxing match before. He goes, I'll count the punches for you. No.
That's not the first time I've heard it. People think it's but what we did was we broke it down to one fighter. It's really impossible to try to count the punches for two fighters. I don't see how it's possible. But we broke it down, and we if you're just watching one fighter, you can kind of get into a rhythm with the fighter. And, you know, you're watching two moving objects as opposed to four.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke it down that way, and you know, we broke it down into jabs. Jabs miss, jabs connect, and power punches miss, power punches connect. And that was the original program.
Okay, and it's still rocking and rolling. And, of course, you guys have now moved it over to the world of mixed martial arts. And, of course, the USC rocking and rolling. Of course, they're doing shows. You're not politically connected anymore. Are you surprised that the USC fighters get paid peanuts like they do when that company's bringing in all the money it is? I mean, they get paid about an average 8 to 12, maybe 16 cents on the dollar.
You know, the marketplace that really predict, you know, really is, and star value predicts, you know, what you're going to get, and it always has.
True, but you can't become a star if you have death match after death match. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is back in the days of kayfabe, when we watched Bruno Sammartino have death matches, he could have them three or four times a week, okay? But these guys can't have them fight after fight after fight. And that's how Dana White reduces these guys in value, is that he puts them in death matches each for such a long time that no normal human being is going to be able to continue winning.
Yeah, I mean, if a fighter had to go out and fight the Thriller in Manila every fight, of course, you know, they're going to have very, very short careers.
Okay.
Very short.
Did you guys do the David Tua Ikebeabuchi fight up there in Sacramento? Do you remember?
Yes, we did.
You know, I televised that fight. I did the international television. I think Dan Duva hired me for that one. I did it by myself, and that was an experience. Is that still hold a record for the most punches thrown in a heavyweight fight?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure if that. I'm not up to the stats the last few years. I haven't been really watching. You know, and I'm not sure if it's a record, but it was a bomb. It was a very high connect percentage in that fight. High connect percentages.
Of all the fights that you sat ringside for 20 years, run off four or five right now that you thought were like, just you'll never forget.
My number one will always be Hagler Leonard.
Yeah,
Hagler Leonard. That night going into Caesar's Palace that night, there was such an electric at ringside. I mean, right now, just talking about it, Pedro, the hairs are standing up on my arm
now.
Just talking about it, and you know, at the end of the fight, because it was such a close fight, and we'll be debating the. We'll be debating the decision forever. Our numbers play a big part. And then, you know, that night we had worked in Sugar Ray Leonard's training camp. Also, we tracked him in sparring, and we did a study for Ray Leonard's people on Hagler for that fight.
Wow.
And Ray credits us with coming up with helping him come up with the strategy. We in the numbers. In analyzing Hagler's fights, we saw that his punch output was high and started dropping in the middle rounds. And Leonard kind of stayed, you know, he kind of weaved it into his fight plan.
Wow. The secrets of Ray Leonard getting ready for Marvin Hagler, of course, that was in 1987. Wow, what a day that was, no doubt about that. Everybody was rocking and rolling. You're right, the buzz was incredible. I mean, you know, I think that night was special. I think Hagler Hearns was special. Hey, how do you count a fight when they're punching that fast?
Oh, that was our first major event, Hagler Hearns. And that was just, it was like, my fingers were smoking after the first round. I was like, but that fight actually put CompuBox on the map. But everybody wanted to see the punch count for the fight, and you know, and the connect percentages were through the roof. You know, they both connected about the same amount of punches in the first round, and you know, all around it was numerically it was astounding as it was to watch it.
Okay. When you look back at those times, I mean, the Tyson fights, I mean, bang. I mean, what were the least amount of punches thrown in a fight? Can you remember that? Do you remember that, the least amount of punches thrown?
What really might not be the least, but Pinklin Thomas versus Tyson, he averaged 16 punches a round.
Yeah. Poor Pinklin.
Oh, no. Let me correct myself. That was...
That's all right. You're allowed. You're allowed to slip here now and then, my brother. Don't worry about it. Okay. Logan Hobbs is our guest, of course, the man that started CompuBox. He's a boxing writer of note. And of course, I'm going to push you after the break. Yeah, after the break, regarding the Aaron Pryor Alexis Arguello controversy. Of course, we talked about that online. Of course, people listening to the show know exactly what I'm talking about. The fact that I think that the gloves were tampered with as far as Aaron Pryor was concerned in the first Alexis Arguello fight. Arguello thought the same thing. Pryor wouldn't answer me on it. He would say, quote, he was aloof, to put it that way. And, of course, the gloves disappeared after the fight. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking through the world of boxing MMA. Back with the bean counter extraordinaire, Logan Hobson, after the break.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
But he has a shock in store for him. He has two great chances, slim and none, and Slim's out of town.
I talked to the wire-haired wonder last week on the telephone. He sounded, you know, pretty sharp, Don King. And he said he'll be calling me next couple weeks. He got something happening, so we'll see if that materializes. Today in boxing history, 1957. It was a great year, no doubt about that. R.T. Moore returned the World Light Heavyweight title with a 7-round KO over Tony Anthony. It was in L.A. 1965 in London, the U.K., Ken Buchanan, the former world lightweight champion, the guy that lost to Roberto Duran in 1972, I believe, was a second-round stoppage of Brian Torres. That was his pro debut. And in Miami, Pernell Whitaker in 1996 defeated Wilfredo Rivera for the WBC welterweight title. Straight up, today in boxing history, brought to you by our house historian. Now back to my guest from Southern California, of course, originally from Brooklyn. I'm talking about Logan Hobson. And Logan, I got to ask you, man, Arguello and Pryor, you watched that fight. You were there. Talk to me about it. Let's water the plant. Let's water the plant here.
That was another electric in the Orange Bowl. That was they had a fireworks display right before the fight. It was just the place was rocking, and it was a tremendous fight. And you know, at the end when Arguello was knocked out, I mean, he was out for a while, a good 5 minutes. And I remember I was covering the fight for United Press International with the late Joe Conicelli, and you're trying on the rain to see if working for a wire service. I want to see if he's okay. We want to file a bulletin. You know, it was just trying to get up there. And you know, the next day I was told to go over to Pryor's hotel and interview him with the rest of the Ed Skye was there from the AP and a few other guys. We went over, and I remember Pryor's hands were his knuckles. They were grotesquely swollen. And, you know, being kind of a new kid on the block, it did, you know, I just, it didn't strike me as, wow, that's unusual. Not until a few years later and after the Louis Resto and the gloves being taken, did it kind of occur to me that, you know what, I hadn't seen anything like that before that or since. Did it strike me that was odd that, you know, to see a fighter's hand so swollen, the knuckles?
I mean, he's been exposed now. Panama Lewis, he passed away this week, and people are jumping all over me for kicking him in the teeth. I call him the Charles Manson of boxing. I mean, he wrapped this guy's hand. Imagine this. He wraps the hand with a small little amount of wrap. Then he wraps it in plaster of Paris. Then he wraps it over with some more hand wraps so you can't see the plaster of Paris. Then the athletic commission comes in and checks the wrap and says it's okay. So then he sprays water on the wrap, and it makes the wrap into a cast, okay? That was one of the things he did. Another thing he did was used to give guys asthma medicine that made them breathe better in the later rounds. That's what I think Pryor took. I think he got some asthma medicine that opened up his lungs in the 14th round there. And, of course, Pryor's gloves disappeared after the fight, Logan. What happened to Pryor's gloves?
I have no idea. They were gone. I don't, you know, the commission at the time, wasn't that strong a commission at the time. You know, I don't know since, but it wasn't like it was in Nevada or, of course, the rest of the thing happened in New York.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was real easy to slip a curveball by some of these commissions back then.
I mean, what a mad scientist. Can you imagine that? Somebody diabolical enough to wrap somebody's hands in a plaster Paris cast and then have it inspected by the athletic commission and then spraying it with water and making it hard. I mean, that's diabolical.
Yeah. I mean, when Arguello was laying flat out cold, I was. We were really concerned about it, you know, whether he was, you know, in the moment, we were really concerned about his safety, you know, if he, you know, anything, you know, if it was brain damage or, you know, what it turned out. But, you know, funny, here's Arguello, Pedro, a warrior. I mean, in every true sense of the word. And you could see that knockout had, it just had a little more of a psychologically debilitating than I've seen other fighters react to being knocked out. It's almost like, you know, afterwards he said, I'll never forget that beating, Arguello said, and he was a humble guy and he would say something like that, but it's almost like something happened to him in the ring that night that he couldn't understand.
It broke him. It broke him.
Yes.
He was never the same afterwards. I mean, the suicide, coming on this show saying he wanted to kill himself, me going down to Nicaragua and trying to get him into a rehab, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean,
God bless you for that, Pedro.
You know,
God bless you for that.
I want to say this, Jose Suleiman came up with the money for that. So I called Suleiman on the phone. I said, you know, you screwed Alexis over. He goes, what are you talking about? I said, you made him re-sign with Don King when he could have made more money with somebody else. And he got silent on the other phone. I said, so right now he's got some crack problems. I said, I need some money to bring him and his family to San Francisco. There's some Nicaraguan, a big Nicaraguan population here. We'll put him in rehab, blah, blah, blah. Suleiman says, how much you need? I said, I think about 35 grand. He says, you got it. So he gave me like 5 grand to get on a plane to go down there and try to drag our way out of Nicaragua. He wasn't doing it. But, you know, Suleiman gets kicked in the teeth a lot by me, okay? But you got to give him props there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, try to save. And, you know, it's fine. Like, it really goes against the grain when you think of, like, Arguello suicide or Arturo Gatti. You look at them in the ring and you look at, you know, how courageous, what warriors, and suicide just, it boggles the mind that guys like this, of that nature, with their strong mentality, commit suicide.
You know, Arguello looked at me. We were talking in Nicaragua. We were sitting in his backyard, and I was jamming him up about something, about the drugs and this kind of stuff. And the subject veered off to boxing, and he looked over me, and I saw a little tear, like, roll out of his eye, and he said to me, Pedro, I never been busted up like that in 90 fights. And I said, so you think the gloves were tampered with? He goes, I know they were. He goes, I never been hit that hard in my life, ever. He goes,
I believe it.
You know,
I saw a fry his knuckles the next day. I'd have to come down on the side that something was not right in that fight.
And you know, and he was never ever the same, not physically, not mentally. I mean, he wasn't talking. He didn't have any suicidal thoughts. He never did cocaine before the prior fight. I mean, and it was funny. You know, afterwards, both these guys are like in Miami doing cocaine together. I mean, that was really weird. I said, how the hell did you end up doing coke down in Miami with Aaron? He said, I don't know, but it happened. We did a lot of cocaine together. That's weird, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, addiction's a funny, you know, addiction's a funny thing. It's you know, when somebody's in pain and, you know, I think humans are built to soothe themselves. Any animal is built to soothe themselves, mm-hmm. and a lot of pain can bring out addiction. If, you know, of course, there's a lot to do with DNA and, you know, trauma, and there's, you know, a lot of things go into addiction. But, you know, mm-hmm. it's like the last resort to soothe oneself.
Yeah. Logan Hobson. One of our final questions here. Who was the greatest athlete you think you've ever seen?
The greatest athlete? I'd have to... I'm gonna say Roy Jones.
Okay, talk to me and tell me why.
Just the instincts, just that, you know, the hand-eye coordination, the grace, and, you know, the strength, you know, all you know, the reflexes, everything put together. And another one that's when I think of Roy Jones, I think of Lomachenko also.
Wow. You know, Roy Jones, Ray Leonard and I were kicking it in Oakland, California in the 1988 Olympic trials. They were in Oakland, then they moved off to Concord for the finals. And Ray was telling me he's going to sign. He's going to try to give $500,000, eventually $1 million, to Roy Jones to sign. He was going to sign Roy Jones. So he's got $100,000 in a briefcase, and he's walking around. I think we're in Concord, California. And he comes to me. He's got this really concerned look on his face. He goes, you know, Pedro, Roy has a glass jaw. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, no, he has a glass jaw. He goes, he's been knocked out twice in the gym with the big gloves on. He goes, he was snoring at one time. I said, the guy says, so? Whoa. He goes, I don't know if I want to sign him now. That was, yeah, that was the scoop. $100,000 in a briefcase.
Don King's right? Haseem Rahman beat Lennox Lewis.
Yeah.
I think this Cedric Kushner and Don King were running him with briefcases full of money.
Wait. But Cedric offers him a check for $24 million from HBO, and instead he takes $350,000 in cash from Don King. What an idiot.
Well, may he rest in Cedric.
I mean, Cedric was a character, but I mean, you got to be kidding me, man. $24 million. I got you a $24 million deal with the biggest company in the entire world, Time Warner. And he said, no. And then, of course, Don King told him that check ain't no good. Oh, can you believe that? I mean, Logan. Hey,
My favorite line, Pedro, ever from Don King.
Yeah.
I've been a victim of trickeration.
Yeah, trickeration. That was one of his words. Anyway, Logan, it's a pleasure spending some time with you again. I got to invite you back again real soon, man.
Thanks, Pedro. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
You're the greatest. Logan Hobson, that was a fantastic time on the radio. Of course, going back, we haven't talked in like 10 or 15 years, so when you see somebody, just roll it on the radio. Don't prep it. If you prep it, it just doesn't work. I kid you not. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA, of course, coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California, live on Twitch.tv, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211. This is a Sunday show. You might be listening to this in a podcast form, of course, then that's at Anchor.com. Anchor.com's got all the recent Ring Talk Live Worldwide podcasts. Straight up, you are tuned to the longest running show in history, boxing history. I talk about Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Often imitated, but never duplicated. It's come true, yeah. Want to stand alone in the dark, yeah. You can make the light shine through. It takes two, baby. It takes two, baby. Me and you. Just us two. It takes two, baby. It takes two, baby. Make a dream come true.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
We can all be quiet and peaceable and have a few beers together and listen to the music and not make any wrong moves.
Man, that's one hell of a horn section, the mighty Tower of Power, of course. Larry Bragg's on lead. Who discovered Larry Bragg's? I did. He was playing some club on Fisherman's Wharf. I told Tower of Power, listen, this guy can really sing. Oh, really? You think so? Yeah. He stayed with him 12 years. I never got a cut of that check. Larry, you send me the check. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Now we take it across the pond to the UK and bring in a guy that I've been going back and forth with for a couple of years, talking about Kenny Rainford. Kenny, how's life treating you?
Life's good, Pedro. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, man. Tell me about UK boxing. What's happening in the UK? I mean, outside of Anthony Joshua, and do you think he's really the do people in the UK think he's the real deal after getting knocked out by that fat guy?
No, Anthony Joshua, to me, with no disrespect to any former pro fighter, Anthony Joshua to me is a poor man's Frank Bruno.
Whoa. And expand on that. Of course, Frank Bruno twice challenged for the World Heavyweight Championship and folded both times. The second time, Bruno was scared to death. I was at that fight. When he fought Tyson the second time, he was scared to death. In fact, we shared a first-class seat. Frank, funny you brought that up. Frank Bruno and I sat together in first class coming from Las Vegas to San Francisco the day after the fight, me, him, and his wife. So that was an experience. But, yeah, he was scared to death. But, you know, you can't really fault guys of being scared of Mike Tyson. I mean, you know, he was a different animal back then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Frank was Frank, and, you know, he stepped up to the plate. You know, he eventually got there with Oliver McCall, but against Tyson he failed down to his physical disadvantages with Mike being a sharper guy and you know, just a so much better fighter. But back to Anthony Joshua. Joshua, for me, there's two fighters out there you can't beat. One is Deontay Wilder, and the other one is Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury beats them all with his size and his style. And, you know, if Andy Ruiz had trained properly, Ruiz would have beaten him as well, I believe, in the rematch.
Anti-Louise. I don't call him Andy Ruiz. I call him Anti-Louise. Listen, I can't imagine. I saw pictures of him with cocaine in front of him and that kind of good stuff like six, 7, 8 weeks before the fight. Then people were telling me, man, the guy's fat as a pig. I said, oh, come on. He's defending the World Heavyweight Championship. He's got to have some pride. Then I found out he showed up to Camp Kenny weighing 317.
It's disgusting. I mean, it's horrific. The guy's got, without a doubt, talent. And to see it wasted like this in this day and age, you know, I was brought up on the golden era of boxing, 60s and 70s and 80s. And, you know, I heard you talking about Alexis Arguello and Pryor and stuff before. You know, them guys, when they were at the peak of the game, they dreamt, slept, ate boxing. Mm-hmm. There was nothing else for them, you know. And all them guys, Larry Holmes, who's a very dear friend of mine, Joe Frazier, Ken Norton, they all went into a camp and lived the life diligently for 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, whatever the camp was. And they didn't break any camp rules. They had hardened trainers, hardened conditioners. You know, it was so much different. Now it's some of these camps, they're not camps, they're holiday camps.
Yeah, I went to a few camps, and I spent a couple camps with Ray Leonard. In fact, for the second Hearns fight, he and I were down there for like 15, 20, almost 20 days together in Florida. And, you know, he was totally in. I mean, it was nothing but this fight. There was nothing on his mind but this fight. And today's fighters, per se, you know, they're on the internet and they're doing this and doing that. And plus, I don't think any of them could go 15 rounds.
No, impossible.
You know?
Impossible. You know, they went on about Joshua Klitschko being one of the greatest heavyweight fights ever. Yeah, it was a good fight, but let's just back up a bit. Does it compare to a Holmes Norton? Not even close. You know, does it compare to Ali Frazier one? Not even close. You know, the people jump on the bandwagon and try and build up these modern day fighters, but you know, they're so slow and sluggish and one-dimensional, and it's wrong to even categorize. They're so much bigger, yeah. But are they better fighters? No, I don't think so. Not even close.
Okay, Kenny Rainford from the UK is our guest, retired professional boxer. Why is it that, all right, why is it there aren't any teachers anymore? I mean, when I look back at things, I think of Ray Arcel and Freddie Brown and people like that. You know, and maybe Angelo to an extent. And, of course, guys out here on the West Coast, I can't think of his name right now, but his face is right in front of me. Anyway, the bottom line is these guys were like, they were into their fighters. It was, I mean, I remember Eddie Futch telling me one time, sat him down, I said, why did you, he goes, I couldn't let Joe go off of that last round against Ali. He goes, he wanted to go out really wanted to go out. He goes, but I couldn't let him go. He goes, I had his life in my hands. You know, and that's the way you should look at it. Most cornermen don't look at it that way. Most of these guys are so brave. In fact, this UFC crap, have you ever seen a towel thrown in the UFC fight? Never.
No. I mean, a real good trainer who sadly passed away a number of years ago was Bill Slayton.
Yeah.
And I was privileged to speak with Eddie Futch at length for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
You were mentioning in his show, I believe, earlier about Panama Lewis, and he was training, or he had something to do with Mike McCallum when I was in the top rank gym there. And I got to spend a week with Eddie Futch talking about, you know, the fact that he'd sparred with Joe Lewis, and he'd seen every great fighter from Joe Lewis right up to the modern day. And I asked him where he raised Larry Holmes, and he said Larry is a talent that has been oversighted by the fact that he came right behind Muhammad Ali, you know, and he just couldn't rave enough about Larry. And we got talking about different fights. And you talk about a great trainer. Is it, you probably heard this story before, but Eddie was training Kenny Norton in about, I think it was about 1970, 71, around there. And my buddy, who, you know, Ernie Shavers, came to town looking for some sparring. And Ernie ended up sparring with Big Mac Foster. And they put the 20-ounce gloves on Ernie. And I forget what round it was, second or third round they were sparring. And Ernie come inside of Mac Foster, threw a left hook to the body, left hook to the head, and a right hand, and knocked Mac Foster clean out. So they were looking for more sparring partners. And Eddie had been watching Ernie spar. And they said, hey, what about sparring the big guy, Kenny Norton? And Eddie Foot says, no. Kenny wanted to spar. Kenny was up for sparring. But Eddie said, no, he ain't sparring my fight. He has a fight next week, blah, blah, blah. He went on to tell me it was an excuse because he had seen the styles. Kenny's style was all made for Ernie, and Ernie was just not made for Kenny at all. So right from the get-go, Eddie told me, I always said to Kenny Norton, no matter what stage your career, beginning, middle, or end, never fight this guy. He's all wrong for you. Your style is made for him, and he punches so hard. You're gonna be risking a certain loss fighting him. And how true it was.
He's the only guy I've heard of in boxing history where you can see his punch coming and still get knocked down by it. In other words, you know yourself that if you see a punch coming, for 99.9% of the time, you can, maybe it hurts you, but you're still standing. Okay. Then when you get hit with a shot, you don't see it, lights out.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Okay. Let's talk about Alan Minter. Of course, the ex-middleweight champion passed away recently. Of course, he was a class act. The two times that I was in the UK, I got to meet him one time, and he treated me like I was his friend. I mean, he was a nice guy.
I met Alan numerous times. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. Alan was a nice, jovial guy. You know, in retirement, he liked to drink and stuff like that. But, you know, that's his doing. That's his thing, you know. But he was always very polite and courteous around me. I knew him for many years. We met at the WBC convention in 2012, I think it was, and over here when they had all the champions over, we had a great time. Very polite guy. Very, very sad to see him die at such a young age, by today's standards, 69, of cancer. Very fond of playing golf. And, you know, I don't know if you know as well, Pedro, sadly we've heard that former world welterweight champion Lloyd Hunnigan suffered a heart attack yesterday.
That must have been when he realized he lost to Jorge Vaca.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to tell you like this, Kenny. You know, you and I both could beat Jorge Vaca, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look at him. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not bragging or boasting, folks. I mean, talent level, Jorge Vaca was never there. I don't know. I still can't figure out how Hunnigan lost him.
I don't know. Maybe it was partying in the gym and not taking him too seriously. I don't know. You know, like you know, how can you go from beating Donald Curry to losing to Vaca? You know?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. You know, you brought up Eddie Futch. I don't know if you know this, but the guy that ran Motown Records and started Motown Records, Berry Gordy, was a professional boxer. I think he was 11-3 with a draw and like 4 or 5 knockouts. But Eddie Futch used to train him. He's still alive. He turned 90 at a birthday party last September, I think, or something like that. And Lenny Williams went. But Lenny said that Berry Gordy at 90 years old was the life of the party, dancing, having a good time, having a few drinks, the whole 9 yards. He's still rocking and rolling. I hope I can rock and roll at 90 like that.
I'd just like to get to 90, let alone rock and roll.
Okay. Well, now, how many fights did you have?
I had I think it was about 15 professional fights, something like that, 12, 15 professional fights. But then I went on the semi-professional circuit just to keep my hand in. I ended up doing exhibitions with Tim Witherspoon, stuff like this, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I still train, as you probably know, to this day. You know, I enjoy me training, like
me,
you know,
too.
Like. You know, I really love it. Still good. I jog about twice a week. I hit the gym 3-4 times a week. I have one day off. You know, it's just part of my life now. You know, from the age of, I guess, about 10 or 11 when I first walked into a gym, I just felt there was something there, you know, that eventually I would progress to. I mean, I never made it by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been very, very blessed to have met the people that, you know, I've met. You know, I can call Larry. I speak to Larry Holmes every week or every 2 weeks. We're firm friends. We train together for a week. I fought on his bill. Great achievements. You know, Ernie Shaver is a very, very dear friend of mine. Always has been, always will be. You know, Kenny Norton, Joe Frazier, they're all friends. And
can I interrupt you to tell you a Ken Norton story before my old senile ass forgets? Okay, so we're together. Ken Norton, I put together Harold Smith, and I put together this parade of champions. It was going to be Ken Norton, George Foreman, Muhammad Ali, and there was a fourth. I can't remember who the third guy was. Anyway, but the bottom line is, Norton is giving Ali a bad time. He, like, just, he's really bitter. I mean, I'm trying to get these guys to talk to each other, and he's really bitter. He's really being an ass. You know what I mean? So anyway, so Ali looks at him, and we're about to go on the stage. We're in the green room, and we're about to go on stage. And I said, "Come on, you guys, chill." You know, because you can just feel the tightness. You know what I'm saying? Just chill. Larry Holmes was there as well, and Ali realizes the situation, what's going on. So he leans over to Norton. He goes, "Hey, champ, you know that last fight? I think you may have got the better of it that night." And Norton starts crying right then and there. We're about to go out. The music is playing. I'm supposed to bring these guys out on stage, and I got Ken Norton crying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because he was.
How did you score that fight, Pedro? I thought Norton won it.
I'm not. You know what? I don't remember scoring that fight, but I thought that Ali was way past his peak at that point in time, and he had no business in a professional boxing ring. I mean, you look at the Muhammad Ali that tried to fight Leon Spinks the first time and the second time. Good Lord, he could barely put two punches together, and he had a physical at the Mayo Clinic for the Larry Holmes fight in 1980. They took him to the Mayo Clinic because the Nevada Commission wouldn't approve him. They took him to the Mayo Clinic, and he couldn't touch his finger to his nose, and they gave him a boxing license.
Yeah, Pedro, it was sacrificial to let Ali fight Holmes and Burby. Yeah. Okay, he wasn't that great against Spinks, but to win the title for the third time, that was the perfect curtain call. Get out and stay out. You know, that for me, as a young man, as a young kid, I was 12 years of age when he fought Leon Spinks the second fight, and where I lived, he never won the fight dramatically or nothing. He just pecked and poked his way through the fight. The one thing he did, he danced 15 rounds. But no, that fight was the perfect curtain call.
Good point. Kenny, I thank you for your time. God bless. We'll be talking real soon. And bottom line is, I really thank you for spending some time with us on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, bringing us your boxing resume and your acumen. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts, man. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Kenny Rainford on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
That's what you got to do. Let's get out of this hot sun into a nice cool bar.
In a few minutes, honey.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
37 years of radio. Did I think I'd do radio this long? Actually, I did it to show I could do it. It was like a dare type of thing to somebody, so I thought I could do it. I did it, and we fell into a niche, and before you knew it, we were syndicated in like 1992 or 1990. And the bottom line is we've been looking in the rearview mirror since then. But the bottom line is I thank you so much for people tuning in, like Ron Wong from South San Francisco. He's been with me since the start, man. Ronnie and I, Ronnie's tight. Now, want to get off on a negative just for a second before we close the show. My friend's mother, Olivia Meservi, has been in a senior citizen's home. You know, she's got bad health. She had a stroke. So she's been taken care of for like the last couple of years. And her care has been pretty good. I mean, I go visit her often. Until the virus came out, I was visiting her like 2-3 times a week sometimes. Anyway, she was my therapist, my Hebrew therapist, my free Hebrew therapist. All it cost me was a cup of coffee and a couple of McGriddles. Anyway, I found out this morning she tested positive for the coronavirus. She's like 90 years old. I mean, this is like the worst news I could ever get at this point in time. I'm just hoping that that all works out well. She doesn't show any symptoms now at all, but the bottom line is this is not good news. Anyway, Ring Talk Live Worldwide ends on a positive note. I thank you so much for spending some time with me. Of course, 37 years now of knocking out all bums, often imitated but never duplicated. That is me. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Now, you may think I'm humble, but no, I'm not. I've been knocking out all bums for 37 years. I plan to do this for another 37 years. At the end of the day, you know this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Saturday and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time on Sports Byline. Until next time, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.